All right, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 19th of August, Anno Domini 2008, and you poor, poor people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And this, yeah, folks, you got to excuse it, but poor Nick, I feel so sorry for him because he is literally suffering. So this show is definitely out of the true kindness of his heart that he dragged his butt here, can hardly talk.
Isn't it good Rob Linton isn't here?
You could do a good John DiTullio without even trying.
I love the Red Sox. Yeah, what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened, and then I'll shut up for the rest of the show.
No.
My dogs, yesterday, I have these two dogs, 70, 75 pounds apiece. And I have these two cats, one of which is about, 5 pounds. And the dogs went after the cat. I don't know why. They've never done it before. I think they weren't serious because the cat is fine.
Just playing.
Apparently.
In a dog kind of way.
The cat didn't get it. I certainly didn't get it. So I'm in there screaming, yelling, hauling at these dogs, trying to get them off the cat, screaming and screaming and screaming. And that's what was left when I was done screaming.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, the cat's fine. The dogs are fine.
It's your throat that took the beating.
That's me.
Just that the moon in the right position or something? Or
who knows what set them off? The heck knows. They may have been out. They had just come in, so they may have been out chasing squirrels or something, and then the cat just made the right move. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I don't know that they were serious because they had her, you know, and they didn't really hurt her at all. I mean, there was no mark on her, no.
They weren't
nothing.
Serious then.
They clearly weren't serious, but I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, no, they were just treating her like another dog.
Right. They wanted to play.
Yeah, it was a fuzzy ball that moved on its own.
Right. And they seemed so confused when I was mad at them. So clearly they weren't. They were playing.
But it just got play that got carried away a little too much.
But I was screaming and yelling because I was in the other room, and by the time I ran in, I was screaming and pulling at them and screaming. And
you with your bad knee running after dogs and trying to wrestle them off.
My knee is fine. It's my voice that's gone. So I'll just sit here and eat my walnuttos.
All right, well, Nick kind of handed me over the news here, folks, and one of the items we want to talk about right up at the top of the hour, so we can cover it a little bit later on, is the poll of the week. And this week's poll is, what's your favorite Google app? We've got a number of them. Google is great when it comes to finding different things. But behind that is the story that Google has solved a problem. I guess evidently it fixes one of the problems with its apps, its start page. Google had solved a problem that affected the layout and functionality of the start pages of its apps hosted collaboration and communications suite. Although the bug had the potential to affect many customers, it manifested itself only in the instant when apps administrators had customized their organization's start page, said Rish Sharda, Google's apps product manager. So, like anything else, folks, when stuff comes out, there's going to be a few flaws and everything, and of course, the hackers are definitely going to try to find a hole in it and find out if they can exploit it and everything else. Anything decent, you can be rest assured that a hacker is going to try to find some malicious way around it.
Well, and this was not for the regular user.
Right.
If you just used Gmail or whatever, it was fine. What this was about was people who are hosting their business stuff.
Yep.
And you've got customers doing that, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, a couple of them.
Did they have that problem?
Not that I heard.
I would have heard,
yeah.
Or you might this coming Monday, now that we've mentioned something, yeah. And by the time this is airing. So the poll of the week is, what's your favorite Google app? Gmail, Docs, Calendar, Talk, Site, Reader, Other, None, Google what now? Like Nick says, go in there and vote, and then when you're done voting, go over to his page. That's AskNick.com.
Dong!
That's AskNick.com, and leave a comment. Polls, and as a matter of fact, Nick is always looking for other ideas for polls. we're constantly, we sit there and try to bang our heads, and matter of fact, the wall is starting to get a few dents. That's why we got to move out of this studio, because of us trying to bang our heads, constantly coming up with stuff, and Nick is doing it each week, but you know, I know he appreciates any ideas and feedback that you can give him. So by all means, there is no dumb question. The only dumb one is the one you don't ask. So you want to get a poll out there, by all means, send it on in, and we'll see what we can do for you.
Dave, take some of the credit, though. Some of those dents in the other studio are from you banging your head when you fall asleep in the rocking chair.
Oh, well, that goes in. That's covered by insurance.
Right. That's our story?
Yep, and I'm sticking to it.
We did have one client down this week with... What is it? The series of unfortunate circumstances?
Events.
Their server died. Okay, they do. So we had the new server up in, you know, in a few hours. But it died on Friday night after everyone went home, so we didn't actually find out about it until Monday morning. So we just have to change the name, server address, to point to the new server. Nobody remembers their Network Solutions account address and password. And the person whose name it's in is long gone. And the business owner was out of town on a sales trip for a week, so he couldn't fax them the forms proving, let me take control of it. So this was terrible.
Always the way.
Write down your password somewhere, please.
What you do is you write your password down, you seal it in an envelope, you sign the back of the envelope, and you put it in the company safe.
Yep.
Then you sign it across the flap, you know, so it's across the two parts. So if somebody does open it, it won't match when they reseal it. Then you've always got that master password there. It's available if you need it, but it's not commonly available to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got to have someone who remembers the combination to the company safe.
Yes.
Which is a different problem, but yeah. Not our responsibility.
The other choice is to just paint the wall with it. Paint it right on the wall.
Yeah.
Now, some institutions and or software will force you to change your password regularly, and that means update your envelope regularly.
Right.
And then the other problem was the company moved a couple years ago, so the original registration information that Network Solutions has on file doesn't match their current letterhead.
But I can see keeping the master password as the one constant one, unless very few know it and everything else, because you start changing it every few months. Right. And the left hand won't know what the right hand's doing as far as the master password. I can see changing individual passwords. Like if you set up, you have your initial master password, and then you have subs underneath it that are also administrators, and they change every so often.
Right.
We've talked in the past about there's a program called 1Password for the Mac that helps manage all your passwords. What was that one on the PC we mentioned before?
Passkeeper,
yeah. So you can put all your passwords
there's
in there.
There's GPass and a couple of others on Linux.
Put them under your own 1Master password.
Well, so I like using, what is it? The handles on my passwords.
Well,
RoboForm.
RoboForm for web forms, yeah.
Well, I love that. Well, it can handle just about any of your passwords. You can create other passwords, and it's all secure because that's even guarded by a password. So if you got your 1Master password for that, then you can get into all your other passwords.
That's one of the nicest new features in Firefox 3. In Firefox 2 and in Safari and the other web browsers, when you log into a page, it says you want to remember your password. In Firefox 3, you don't have to say yes until after you successfully log in.
Yes.
So it doesn't save the wrong passwords. When
yeah, because how many times you hit it, and it's like all of a sudden you go to that page again, and now you've tried, say, 3 different passwords, and all 3 are there to select. And it's
then the other end locks you out for entering the wrong password too many times.
Entered it too many times. Try again.
Actually, speaking of passwords, this is something we should pass on. I've been hearing on some of the other forums I listen to. If you have a Wells Fargo account, which is real big out west, I don't know if anyone here, but if you've moved back this way and still have a Wells Fargo account, they have some really crazy password issues on their online banking login. Apparently, case doesn't matter in the username or the password. Your social security number will work in addition to your username. And it doesn't check the length of your username or password. So say you have a 5-character password and you type 20 characters, it ignores the next 15.
Nice.
And just, so, you know, Wells Fargo apparently used to have problems. They've responded in some of the other forums that people couldn't remember their passwords when most, especially banks, to make a secure password, there's a mix of upper and lower case. You have to put letters and numbers, and that's hard for people to remember. So Wells Fargo tried to make it easier for their customers to remember. which in turn makes it easy for the bad guys to break into.
Okay, let's tell you what, let's take a question. You guys don't think we get out that, you know, as far as our outreach, folks are always saying, how big is your listening audience? Do you really? Well, we got one question here.
This may take the cake right here.
Yeah, from Brisbane, Queensland, Australia.
Cool.
I'm going to pronounce this name probably wrong.
Moira.
Moira. Okay, it says, hello, gents. Australia here. Thanks you so much for the information page. I do have an annoying problem in my Hotmail. I hit a personal signature at the bottom of my email page that looked good. But for some reason, it is gone and replaced by a red X in the square box. I have tried to find the signature, but to no avail. So now every Hotmail that I have sent only has this ugly red X. I would appreciate your help. Thanks so much. Good old Australia.
Supposed to do that in an Australian accent.
Hey, I have enough trouble with English. You want me to do it?
Well, g'day, Myra.
G'day, yeah.
Yeah.
Myra, it's a nice Jewish boy living in Australia?
That would be Moyle, not Moira.
Moira, all right, sorry.
All right, so how do we solve this? Good old Gmail Red X.
Did you say Gmail or Hotmail?
Hotmail.
Oh, Hotmail. Hotmail, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the previous story with Gmail.
Gmail issue. Hotmail. My first guess would be something got lost in the transition to live mail.
Well,
Microsoft is transitioning Hotmail to live mail.
What's happened is two things. First, first, I really shouldn't be doing this. First, the it could be the security settings in your browser. They have changed with a couple of the latest updates from Microsoft. So look to see whether or not it is allowing download of images from the internet.
Which normally you don't want to do unless you say download, because that's how spammers get your addresses.
Right, right. But the other thing is,
because that's in the Gmail. It's not like Outlook Express, where Outlook Express, you know, how you got to go into the security tab and say allow downloads.
Right, it's stored locally, but this, when you're using webmail, like Hotmail and Yahoo Mail, your signature is stored on their server.
Right, and for you to see it, it's an image. And what the latest Internet Explorer has done, 7, is to block images by default because there are so many exploits that use images. So the thing to do is to open up your Internet Explorer and check in the security settings. Security settings? Yeah, I thought I had reached puberty. Apparently not. To change that, I don't remember where that is off the top of my head.
That would be under Tools Internet Options. And under Internet Options would be the security tab. And that's where you can change all your settings and all that.
I hate to say this, but I have to go get more coffee.
No problem.
I can't. I'll be back. This is the nice part about letting you do the show.
Oh, no problem.
Just wander away.
Yeah, there you go. We got you covered, boss.
Whatever you got to do, Nick.
Now, another thing they could try is somewhere.
Anybody want anything?
No, I'm good for right now.
Somewhere.
Yeah, I'll have a McMuffin.
Somewhere
those
in
apple pies.
Somewhere in the Hotmail preferences setup screen, whatever. I don't use Hotmail, so I'm not sure exactly where it is. There probably is an edit your signature or add a signature option.
Yeah.
Go into there and make sure the signature is still being displayed.
Well, that's the thing. IE changed so much, the IE 7.
Yeah, they're trying to increase the security, which is good. And one of those things is to not download images, because the spammers can use that to have an either an invisible image or we talked in the past about the one pixel image.
Mm-hmm.
So then they know you're a live person because you downloaded that image.
Yeah, and that's the whole trouble, though. Hey, they're trying to put up security, but it's damned if they do and damned if they don't. And yeah, that's sad because, you know, you want the internet to be safe. You want the folks to enjoy it. But on the same, the other side of the coin, you know, you got these hackers that are constantly trying to go after people's identities and everything else. You got to guard yourself 16 ways from Sunday. And a matter of fact, I've had a number of customers, you know, sitting there. They brought their machines in because they've been infested with stuff. And they go, well, you know, maybe my kids are doing it. You know, we've said this over and over again, not to beat a dead horse. But nowadays, most websites, you know, they could be websites that you go constantly to. But if they've got other folks that are running ads, especially when you go to some of these other Google sites and this other stuff, because they've got banner ads running all the way around. That's how they help pay for it. If one of those banner ads has been hijacked, that's how you're going to get hijacked.
This is a real big thing on MySpace a couple of months ago. One of the advertisements that MySpace had on their front page happened to have a virus in it. And so if you went to your MySpace page, which is a known legitimate good site, I don't know about good, but known legitimate site, you could get hit by this virus that came in through the ad.
Popular site.
Yes. Thank you.
There you go. Very well put. But yeah, you know what I mean? It's just something that you got to constantly watch out for, and it's going to get to bite you. All right, another news item here. Nick pulled off for us. Windows 7 is Vista, just a lot better. That's going to be the company line from good old Microsoft. Oh, you know, that Windows 7 will be like Windows Vista. I sure the hope the hell not.
But this time it will work.
Well, that's what they claim, you know, and I got some good swampland for you, too. Because they still are touting, you know, how great Vista is. You know, that's still a great product. And, oh, yeah, it does have compatibility issues with working with other drivers. Like, not. Yep. But more from Microsoft. Steve Ballmer said Thursday that he defined the first 2 years of Vista and claimed that their successors will be a major release. Windows 7, it's Windows Vista a lot better, said Ballmer.
Which is kind of silly. Of course the next version is going to be better, but you never know.
Well, in some ways,
yeah.
And then in other ways,
you know
maybe
what?
Not so.
Ballmer should almost be a politician. You know how politicians will sit there, you ask them a question, and they do everything except answer the question. You know, they can do a great spin and not answer a darn thing.
He went to the politician school.
Yeah, and you're sitting there
going, why would Ballmer want to be a politician? He'd take a pay cut and he'd actually be answerable to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. But anyways, you know, they're still touting that basically the company line is yes, oh, Windows 7 is going to be a lot better. They're going to add a lot more to it. And this is what they touted about Vista, too.
Well, and that's the problem with Vista. There's so much in it, you need much heavier hardware to run it. But now, 2 years later, more people have bought those new Core 2s and dual
here's
processors.
Here's a quote from them. Vista is good. Windows 7 is Windows Vista with cleanup in user interface and improvements in performance. There was no problem with performance with Vista. That's the whole problem. It was too much improvement that folks all of a sudden had to go to the highest-end processor. They had to go at least 4 gig of memory, a high-end graphics card, for stuff just to get the ooh and ah and glow and no real benefits. Like I've said before, when we went from Windows 98 to XP, we wound up gaining more memory because before 98 had 128 meg limit. And we went from DOS-based to NTFS. There were good, compelling reasons to move from 98 to XP. But when you go from XP to Vista, what great improvements? They said, oh, security. And how many things did they tout that were going to be done in Vista, just like they're doing right now with Windows 7, that probably won't make it because of time constraints?
And most people turn off the added security in Vista because it's so annoying. Oh. Do you want to do this? Yes, that's why I clicked the button.
You're right.
Constantly
but
annoying.
Again, the bad guy could sneak in behind and click the button without you knowing it, or try to do something without you knowing it. So.
And we're training people to always click yes every 30 seconds.
So it doesn't matter now that there's security in it if something pops up. And then what was the guy who put out the ad? Click here. Is your PC virus free? Click here to be infected. And he made thousands of dollars on the ad, and thousands of people clicked here to be infected. It was a social experiment, and he didn't actually infect anyone, people clicked there.
Well, it's like I said, right now, Windows XP Antivirus 2008 is dying down a little bit, but right now, Windows XP Antivirus 2009 is making one heck of a comeback.
Which is a fake antivirus program.
And I got a client that just came in Saturday yelling and screaming, can you help me? Can you help me? I paid the $29.95. Is there any way I can get it back? No.
Cancel the credit card you paid for it on.
The short answer is no.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you can...
Because they're not going to stop with $29.95.
Yep.
So many folks that are suckered into this. You know what I mean? And the thing of it is, well, that should be against the law. It is. But you know what?
Well, it's not
against... It doesn't stop people from doing things.
False advertising,
Down in Nigeria and Russia and these other countries, third world countries... They don't give a rat's butt. They're going to take your money and run. And there's not a darn thing our government can do to them.
In fact, that reminds me of the Real DVD mess going on now. The Real company came out with this neat program called Real DVD, which allows you to make a legal copy. Well, that was the thing. It makes a copy of a DVD on your computer, leaving all the copy protection and encryption intact, so then you can watch it on your computer without needing the disk, which is really great for travelers and laptop users. You don't have to carry stacks of disks with you. And they thought, at least, they had permission from the RIAA and everyone in charge to be able to do this. And as soon as they release it, they get sued by everyone involved, and the judge is enjoining them from selling it until he decides whether it's a copyright violation or it's an end run around the DMCA, but they're leaving the encryption and protection intact. And so the lawsuit alleges it's the old rent and steal option, where you rent the disk, steal it, and then return it, where there's no way to prove you actually bought this disk. And so Real is being sued. However, there's hundreds of these little programs scouring the internet for Mac, Windows, and Unix that aren't being sued because there's no big company behind them. So it's very frustrating. And for those of us that legitimately want to copy DVDs onto our computers, and DVD jukeboxes used to be where you'd have a jukebox of 100 physical discs and you could watch whatever you want, that's being merged into or morphed into hard drives. Put a big hard drive on your network, copy all your movies onto it, and watch whatever one you want on any machine, any computer, any television. It's technically illegal because you're making a copy. So it's the law has to catch up with what society wants. And
right, and you're not really stealing it. You're just trying to make it more convenient for yourself if you own all the movies.
Yeah. But if you did steal it, it's just as convenient.
I can see this for parents with young kids. To load it up onto a hard drive.
How many CDs have I had to replace because the kid mucks it up?
Yeah, because they know how to do it. They know how to go up to the thing, pop the drawer open, take one CD out, and put it in. What they don't know is, you know, with their peanut butter and jelly fingers hands, they've wound up, you know, grabbing the CD, put it out, put this one in, and now it's sticking pretty good, you know, and it goes in and then messes up the head and everything else because of the gooey jelly dripping down or whatever.
Just like I used to do with my mom's records.
Yeah.
Vinyl records.
Yes.
And we'll never forgive American Express for that commercial where showing that how the VCR eats oatmeal. How many VCRs were destroyed eating oatmeal.
Right.
But back to Vista, you know, I'm starting to see Vista as the software industry's Edsel. The Edsel was not a bad car. The Edsel was a car in which Ford brought out all their innovations in one model, and people weren't ready for it.
Well,
that's why it failed. So
the big thing, though, that's going to be
a similar situation.
But the big thing that's going to be the thing for System 7 is in the timing. And in that, I mean, right now with the economic times, I mean, you sit there and throw out another system that's going to be high demand as far as horsepower and everything else, even in companies. Yeah,
if they make it need more horsepower than Vista did, it'll die out of the gate. They need to back off on the system requirements.
Matter of fact, they've got to lower it more so than what was required for Vista, only from the standpoint economically. I mean, right now, most manufacturers are already starting to leak out, and they're saying, oh, no, it's not us, on the Black Friday list, just so they can gain some sales. Major companies are really scared and worried that people aren't going to be spending the bucks, because right now...
Who's got the bucks to spend right now?
No. I mean, well, look at the big thing this whole summer, daycations.
Yep.
They created a whole new phrase, daycations. That's how doing things, for you folks that maybe didn't hear of it, up here in Rochester, they're calling it daycations, where you go on a trip. We've got a lot of great things to see right here in the Rochester area and the surrounding counties that you don't have to go too far. And you can spend less money.
See, old joke about people never go to the museums and galleries and whatnot in their own city.
Right, and now they will. Yeah. Instead of taking a long vacation, you take day trips to, just a day trip to whatever, and then they call them daycations.
So I was born in Niagara Falls, and Niagara Falls is a city, it's not a large population, but about half of them have never seen Niagara Falls. Because they can go any day, but they don't.
I lived in New York City, and the only time I went to the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty is when somebody came from Rochester and said, let's go see.
Sure.
I remember once we went to New York City, and I forget what hotel we were staying at, but we got a cab to go to the Empire State Building and visit. And we drove, you know, around and around and around, and then he pulled up, and Apparently, it was like one block over, and the cabbie wouldn't tell us.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
You can see the building from everywhere, but you don't, unless you live there, you don't know what street it's on and how to get there.
Right. The way to take a cab in New York is you get in, you tell them where you want to go, and you tell them the best way to get there.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. I mean, this is what's going to be critical for System 7. It's, one, going to have to run on a little less horsepower. Otherwise, it's going to be doomed just as bad as Vista. And they can sit there and tout how, oh, it's going to have more features and all this other stuff. Well, good. It should have to do more with less.
And what's interesting is that the prediction that I'm hearing is that this will be very good and very bad for Linux. Yeah. People will be able to get Linux free, right? So they don't have to pay for an operating system. But a lot of people are also talking now about buying those $200-$300 machines for the interim until things turn around and they can get something better.
Oh.
Well, they may not really run Linux or anything else very well. So a lot of people getting Linux is good. A lot of people getting Linux and having a bad experience because they bought a cheap piece of junk to run it on is bad.
Well, admittedly, none of those netbooks are going to be good for office work. If you're trying to use it professionally...
No, I'm talking about the desktops, the $300 desktops from places like Walmart.
Well, they should run Linux just fine.
Assuming the hardware lasts more than a week.
There you go. Yeah, there's that.
Okay, tell you what, let's take another question here. We got Jerry from Rochester, and Jerry writes, "Don't know. My computer is running unbearably slow. I have danced a tango, but to no avail. Actually, it never really uncovered anything significant. To be honest, it takes so long to dance that I have never run it in second time as you suggest. It takes 3 minutes and 20 seconds just for a log on and about 39 seconds to log off.
Yeah.
I haven't timed it, but it also has taken inordinate amounts of time to open Word and Excel, yada, yada, yada." And again, he's saying...
Well, look at the hardware.
He's only got 256 mega memory, and he has, let's see, the box
55 meg free.
Yeah, 55 meg free.
Right, not enough free space on your hard drive and not enough memory.
Yeah, Jerry, you're definitely, you know, like we've said before.
But then you come, the customer brings that into your shop, and you say you got to buy more memory and you got to buy a bigger hard drive. I don't want to do that.
Right.
Don't tell them that. You tell them the repair is.
Yeah, the repair is, yeah.
To install more memory and install a bigger hard drive.
But then I know Steve and I are up against the same wall. It's like, do I put more money into this old system and all I'm doing is moving the bottleneck?
Right. Because then, you can put a little more processor and a bigger graphics card.
Yeah, well, you can put the memory in and I can put... Memory would definitely help. I mean, that would be... But then you run into the hard drive. You know, he's running out of space. Either he cleans some stuff off, or you step back.
And we have customers that come in and say, "Can you help me delete stuff from my computer?" "No, I don't know what you want to delete." "Well, how am I supposed to know what to delete?" "You have to decide if you want to delete it or not."
Right. Only delete things in your home folder.
And that's the big problem. They'll delete something in the system directory or something else that
they really wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was, so I deleted it.
Yep.
Okay, you're an idiot. And now it's time to move on.
My computer doesn't. Yeah, if you don't know what it is, especially don't delete it.
The problem that you're describing, though, is the same problem people have with cars.
Hmm?
My car is 10 years old. Do I put another $400 into this repair, or do I just buy a new car?
Yeah. Bite the bullet.
It's even a more tough decision in the PC world because it's, do I put in a $150 graphics card or go get a $300 computer? The dividing line is not so clear.
And there's the misperception. A $300 computer is, well, honestly, going to be crap.
We just talked this.
Won't be any better than the computer you've got now. In fact, probably lower specs.
People need to understand the difference between a $300 and a $1,500 computer is like the difference between a $1,500 car and a $30,000 car. You know, if you want to buy a beater for the winter... You're aware of what you're buying, and you're aware that it's going to be...
And come spring, you'll be buying another one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if I buy a $200 computer, $300 computer, I get it. Another 4 months from now, I'm going to be buying another $300 computer. And as long as you're willing to do that, God bless you.
I mean...
And what's interesting is in 3 months from now, the $1,000 computer will be down to $800, and the $800 computer will be down to $500.
Well, see, that's where I'm saying, that's why Microsoft, again, going back to the subject, Microsoft is going to have to keep Windows 7 very slim. Because come this season, I think you're going to see You know, and this is one thing we should probably over the next couple of weeks, guys, to start getting our list together since we won't be live on the air to talk to folks, you know, other than remind folks that we'll be back on live the 16th of November. And then that's, you know, we're going to be recording on through December. So our normal show where we tell you folks different things to buy and look out for Christmas, we'll be doing over the month of November and maybe in and out through Christmas, up to Christmas, our suggestions here and there. So you're going to definitely want to catch the shows that we are recording right here and now to get you kind of in the know and what to do for the upcoming holidays, because there's going to be some great deals, I think. And I'm thinking the hot thing is going to be, one, on the Mac side, the, you know, your the new iPods and the phones.
Yeah, the new iPod Touch, which is really cool. You get on the internet without needing that $60 a month phone bill. You know, a small pocket internet appliance. That's almost becoming the netbook. I can get on the internet. I can play my music. I can watch my videos. I can watch movies, TV shows. It's in a tiny little device.
Is there a reader application? Is that an iTouch?
Yeah, this is the iTouch. The iPod Touch.
And then on the PC side, I think you're going to see systems there. You know, I mean, one, I think it's going to be hold true for both the PC and the Mac is the bigger screens. I mean, they're going to 24 and 32 and 30-inch screens that, you know, folks are literally, I've had to go out now and start carrying wall anchors.
Yeah.
That I can go through drywall because I get these special wall anchors that I drill a hole through, and they're great for anchoring, you know, and getting the mounting brackets to mount monitors on walls. And they've got the swivel arms and everything else, because that's going to be the big thing is, one, they're thinner. They can go up against the wall, and they're bigger.
And they're green.
And you know, they take up, they're less stress on the eyes than the old tubed monitors. I mean, very seldom do I go around anymore and see any old tubed monitors. I mean, everything is all flat screen. I've got one client with a 30-inch HD TV / monitor on his desk. And it's so close, you know, I mean, it's from here to, I'd say, where these monitors are. He's got this humongous screen. And it's like, whoa. You could sit back in the back part of the room and watch a movie and have a good time.
But the ones that are that size are also TVs, right?
Yeah.
I don't like the resolution. They're not.
No.
Well,
no.
We're starting to see now, because that was always the big difference. A 20-inch television is $100, and a 20-inch monitor is $500, $600 because of the resolution.
Yep.
And now people are more aware of resolution. So you buy a 720 monitor or a 720 television, 1080 television. Now you're getting into the resolution computer monitors have always been. So it's decent enough at 1080 to be able to cross between television and computer. And the big difference there was that you don't sit 12 inches from your television. If you did, you'd see how bad the pixels are at 500 lines.
Okay, another quick question here. Because this gentleman is Mark from Penfield, and he's talking about the Linux. He's running Linux 1G. He says, not a question, just a bit of additional information on tablets. I heard part of the show in my car on the 12th of October. My manager has been running a true, in quotes, tablet for years. He has been having problems with repetitive stress and keyboard / mouse. Is his a true tablet or not one for the more common convertibles? It is a single unit and nothing folds. The cover completely detaches and comes as either a straight cover or a plug-in keyboard. The computer has its built-in completely around the premise that the keyboard and mouse interact is uncommon, and the pen-based input is the norm.
Right. It's one of those things that looks like an 8.5 by 11-inch sheet of paper, or pad of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it has no keyboard, it has no mouse, it's you write on it, that's all you do. Those are pretty nice, actually. There are a couple of models out there. The problem is the number of programs that aren't ready for pen input.
They're not tablet savvy.
Right. You can get around that by having a small application that you can pop up at any time, right in that, hit enter, and it'll put it in the, you know, wherever you've put the cursor. But that's clumsy. It works, but it's clumsy.
Well, the reason I read that story is it kind of leads me into the next topic, whether you guys have seen it. The new HP touchscreen.
Yeah, the touch PC. I saw one on the shelf the other day.
You know, I mean, they're touting it, and they're showing these, you know, pictures and all that. And Lori goes, my wife's saying, oh, that'd be cool. And I'm sitting there saying, yeah, but how many applications are going to take advantage of that, hon? They've got to write programs that are going to react.
More importantly,
which are coming slowly because of things like the iPhone and iPod Touch and the touchscreen cell phones. We're starting to see those touch interfaces.
I don't see a touch interface being useful for most people because most people aren't going to want to have their arms stretched out like that.
Yeah, that's right.
They're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the Minority Report and that whole interface that they've created. Most people aren't going to. I mean, that's great for 5 minutes, 2 minutes, you know, a couple of minutes while you're looking for a piece of datum. But to do it all day long while you're running through spreadsheets and Gmail then, and everything else, no.
But then imagine operating an ATM all day long. It wouldn't work that way.
But then the other problem you got is greasy fingers.
Yes. Yep.
You're now going to look at those fingerprints as you're looking at something else and reading it and see, oh, I was just eating some potato chips and I was touching the screen and, you know, the oils and all that are getting transferred onto the screen. Granted, you can wipe them down in that, but you're going to be constantly doing that. Plus, your hand, like you see, hanging over it, especially it's over your desk and you're usually putting it far enough that it's a good distance for you to view.
This ergonomically, this thing's a nightmare.
Yeah, this. And, but
unless you have a special work surface, a separate workstation where it's mounted on your desk flat, horizontally, then you put your hand on it naturally.
No, you know what? Here's what they need. You know how we have these mouse pads? What they need is like on a Wacom tablet that you can sit there and have this hooked up to it so your finger is right here on your desktop close to you and like a glide point, and you're moving it around doing it through that, not reaching up and touching the screen.
Well, that's the Wacom Cinique tablet. It's a tablet and monitor in one box. The 12-inch model's a grand. The 20-inch model is $2,000 because it's expensive to have a touchscreen that big. But a lot of graphic artists use that because you can write with your pen and draw on the tablet, and you're drawing on the monitor.
So wonderful graphics, for that.
Graphics tablets have been common for a long time, especially for graphic artists like that. But there's a disconnect between drawing on the desk and seeing it on the screen. And so now the Cineques are really nice. They're just too expensive.
And the other problem is unless you've got an art table, which is tilted at the right angle, it's still ergonomically a nightmare, whether it's a nightmare for your arms because you're reaching or a nightmare for your back and your neck because you're hunched over.
Yeah,
it's not going
to
be good.
Well, that's where I got my Wacom tablet. It's just the other side of my mouse pad. So I get to rest my whole arm. I more or less positioned everything around that. So it's comfortable for me that I can lay back in my chair, still reach the pad, and I'm sitting there moving around. And like I said, that Wacom tablet has been the nuts. I'm getting so used to that and being able to right-click with it and not moving around in such a smaller space.
I couldn't live without mine, living with carpal tunnel all the time.
Right.
Strangely, though, I find myself, my hand and wrist hurts more after writing with a pen for longer than typing.
What works for me is the ergonomic keyboards, the Wave.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've still got another.
Yes, that's why I really don't like laptops.
Me too, neither, as a friend of mine used to say.
Speaking, and we're talking about things that are, new and innovative. And one thing that hasn't caught on that we reported a while ago was the, remember the flat keyboards? They were more or less like a skin.
I have one. I love them.
But, you haven't.
It's so cool, but it isn't ergonomically good.
Yeah, no, because you're tapping
could sort
down.
Of lay it over top of a hump thingy so you can.
A hump thingy. Go back to surfing
where do I look up hump things?
Yeah.
He's doing that.
Oh. As usual.
Yeah. That's our Steve. Oh, hump this. But, anyways, yeah, you haven't seen those, really come out quite a bit. I know the big
thing is more expensive. A lot of the PC world. Cheap wins. Doesn't matter if something is better, cheap wins.
It's not just the PC world. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
I have one in the same bag with my OLPC.
Yep.
So instead of that little tiny keyboard made for very small children, I can use this thing. It's odd to type on, but it's fun, actually.
And again, that's why I brought up the HP thing. Is I think this whole touchscreen and everything else has been driven by programs like, say, CSI New York, where they have these big screens, and you see them, they're bringing up this picture and moving over this one and this, doing all this magical stuff. And then Microsoft, which, again, we never heard much about. Remember, they were going to have those coffee tables.
Microsoft Surface.
And you just put,
one of the news organizations has it for their election coverage. I forget which one.
But, you know, you haven't heard much about that. There's another item that Microsoft picked up and really haven't heard much about it.
Because it was 10 grand, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's big.
You put the device down, it'll read the device and put your pictures up there.
I like the one pushing it for restaurants and bars where you see the bill on the tablet and everyone drags their stuff to their corner of the table. And you can split the checks really easy. It's for those of us that go out with friends all the time and have to split the checks. And there's always the one guy that under tips.
Well, you know that.
I know what you're talking about, yeah. Steve.
Okay, tell you what. Let's go to this story. This is one, since we're talking about different devices. California sues over Xbox 360 flaw. The Xbox 360 Red Ring of Death has reared its ugly red head again.
Really?
And it's time in the forums for a class action lawsuit filed by disgruntled customers in California.
You're going to make them gruntled.
Yeah, the lawsuit alleges that the excessive number of Xbox 360 consoles have expected hardware failures, a.k.a. the Red Ring of Death. I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, what happens is when you hit the on button, there's, I think, three.
Four green.
Right.
For each of your controllers.
Right, and if they turn red.
That's a hardware failure.
It's a hardware failure. And the Red Ring of Death means the thing is just dead.
If they turn red, it indicates the presence of a hardware failure. Right. Self-diagnostic.
Yeah. As evidence, the lawsuit presents articles of a variety of gaming publications, including DailyGameNews.com, VentBeat, Digital Media, and Yahoo. Each of these articles states that Microsoft knows as far as back as November 2005 that over 50% of the Xbox 360 consoles were defective. Emphasized added because that is an insane number for in an industry where 3% or so has an accepted norm.
Yeah, and I think that's important to note. When Apple builds Macs and when Dell builds computers and when Dave and Steve build computers, a 3% failure rate is accepted. It's expected.
Yep.
That's what pretty much components come out. You get about a 3%. Right. You get about 3% failure rate. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but of course, when there's billions of them being made, that's a lot of numbers.
And the guys who fail are much more vocal than the people who don't.
Absolutely.
Fail.
But what they're saying is Microsoft knew that there was a 50% failure rate.
And
that's just
it
astonishing,
anyway.
Yes.
The Navy would say unsat unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
Well, this is where, again, we...
The Navy would say something else. The Navy I knew would say something else entirely.
I mean, that's where,
they would start with what I said.
The kinder, gentler Navy.
Too many companies, back in the day when Nick, Steve, and I first started out, a lot of companies would first get folks like us to beta test stuff. Nowadays, they use the public. And they're doing it their best shot to get it out there, and then, for what we'll suffer, it's worth the risk. And they're willing to take it, and, you know, the poor individuals that are suffering, you know, they get a device or something like this, you know, they're going through it, and frustration, the loss of time and effort on their parts, they never get compensated for it, but the industry doesn't care. Oh, well, we'll correct that in the next issue.
Market pressure is so high, and customer demand for getting the things out is so high. But then it turns around and bites them with the bad publicity on how many failures they end up with.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, you expect something that you pay good money for, you get it, and then all of a sudden you're calling tech support.
What if you paid bad money for it?
Well, then maybe you got nothing
to
gripe about.
The Red Ring.
Yeah, you got nothing to gripe about. But, you know, I mean, to get something out, you know, you, the anticipation is there because you have paid for it, that it's going to work. And you get it out, and you get it home, and you spend all the time and effort setting it all up, and then it totally trashes your machine.
And then you wonder if you did it yourself.
Yeah. Of course, they're always going to try to say, well, you probably didn't have this or that off. Bull. They're just trying to do
an
end around.
Some of the early reports were it was overheating because a lot of people put their game consoles in the rack with their stereo consoles. And that goes back to like the little cubby holes on your computer desks where you jam your computers into. Mm-hmm. So there's no airflow around them. There's no cooling around them. And one of the hottest sellers for the Xbox and the PlayStation are intercoolers, which is basically another fan blowing on it. So a lot of the early thought was it was just overheating because you shoved it in a cubby hole.
Yep.
Well, as of February, Microsoft had sold 18 million of them. So a 50% failure rate, 9 million.
Yep.
Yeah, right, 50%.
Okay, tell you what, let's do one more question. This is from Andy. He's from Rochester. Having a problem using DSL to connect to the network. I've been having the problem of not being able to connect to the internet, particularly in the morning hours. Just for the heck of it, I tried using control panel to disconnect and reconnect. That seems to work, but I don't understand why. Why can I not have the... What can I do to not have to disconnect, reconnect every time I need to use the network?
Does he say if he's using a router or is he connected right to the DSL box?
No, that's...
That would be the first thing to check. If you are using a router, disconnect the router, plug one computer directly to the DSL box. Because it does sound like there's a failure somewhere, whether it's in your router getting an address or if it's in the DSL router getting its address from upstream. And if it's the DSL router, then you can easily get another one from your DSL provider or open a service ticket with them.
Well, I think they've been... I don't know whether you've been seeing it or not, but noticing a lot of folks having issues lately with their routers, their cable modems or their DSL modems that, you know, some of them, especially the DSL modems, our Roadrunner modems, have had clients have had to replace a certain series.
Well, that goes,
Toshiba.
Yeah, that goes back to the failure rates. These electronic devices are getting made so fast and so cheaply that it's not uncommon to have failures in them, which is very annoying. And your DSL or cable routers and is something you don't think of turning off at night. So it's always on, it's always running, which ends up wearing out faster.
Yeah, because he doesn't really state.
Well, yeah, it sounds like there's something definite. Well, if it's hard to say, but it does sound like
his email address is AOL.com, which means it might be Roadrunner. And again,
or he could be using AOL on top of Frontier DSL.
Yeah, I mean, it really can't. But it really doesn't tell, you know, what it is that would be a little more helpful.
So it sounds like what he does is goes into his network control panel and releases and renews the IP address. Yeah. And that tells his computer to ask the upstream to give me another address.
And the upstream may be his router.
Right.
Yeah, because, again, you know, like Nick, I know, has the problem. You know, he's got squirrels and all that. They could be, you know, getting a very weak signal. Sometimes it might, depending on the weather, get a real strong one. Some of the others might get a weak one. DS is always a thing, distance from the DSLAM. And Roadrunner is a matter of how many folks are on that particular node that you're on.
Right, it could be that the network upstream from you, cable or DSL, is running out of addresses. And the way the system works is you are leased an address for a certain period of time, usually 8 hours, is it, or 24 hours. And if you...
Getting all choked up about it.
Yeah, choked up about that.
Yeah, but Steve's actually contagious.
Nah, it's just a cold.
That's why I'm on this side.
Yeah, colds are contagious, Steve. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Nah. Whoever uses this mic next. So you get a lease from your internet provider to use that address for a while. And so you say you're surfing along, and then overnight, your computer's not using the network, the lease expires, and your address is given to somebody else who needed it. So then when you come back in the morning, you need a new address to get your computer online. Now, your router is supposed to handle all that automatically for you, but you can force the issue by releasing and renewing it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving right along. Let's go to another news topic we can cover here. New Apple iMac due in the next couple of weeks. You heard this one, Steve?
Well, that's always the rumors. We just had a new MacBooks come out, the MacBook and MacBook Pro, and now they look like the iMac. They're aluminum and glass, and there's some interesting limitations. The new MacBook doesn't have FireWire, which...
And that's causing just a bit of a stir on the internet.
Yeah. USB
really frosted my cookies.
USB is fast enough for most people, but FireWire is much faster and very common in video cameras and audio, high-end audio production devices.
Like my stuff.
So you need FireWire, which then forces you to the MacBook Pro, which does have a FireWire port.
Which is another
$1,500. You know, $500 to $700 over the cost of a MacBook.
Well, once you figure in all the accessories,
yeah,
that you
the other
as
stuff
well.
You get, yeah. And surprisingly enough, what typically happens in the industry is the new models come out at a lower price or the same price, And in this case, the new MacBooks are actually $100 more than the old ones used to be. They're still making the plastic one. The big deal is that the plastic MacBook, the previous generation model, is now $999, so that's a nice buy at the low end. But missing FireWire on the MacBook is really annoying. And on the MacBook Pro, they're now glossy screens only. You cannot get a matte screen. The 17-inch high-end MacBook Pro didn't change very much. It's still the old-style aluminum, again, the previous generation. But glossy is now standard, and matte is optional. So for professional users who need color accuracy, a matte screen is much better. For home users, the glossy screen gives you brighter and more vibrant colors, so that makes your photos look better. And that's how the previous generation were marketed. But it's a real big issue on the net now with no FireWire on the MacBook.
So whereas they were making inroads into the enterprise, now they've taken two steps backwards from it.
Well, one of the responses from Jobs is that, weirdly, they had a Q&A after the announcement, is the MacBook Pros are for pros. So if you're a professional user, you're going to buy the Pro, which has the port you want on it. But
not the matte screen.
But not the matte screen. So now you got to go to the even more expensive machine to get the matte screen.
Or somebody else's machine,
period, yeah. So now that the MacBooks have been revved, the next logical step would be the iMacs.
What about, though, they're talking here at the 20-inch and the 24-inch iMacs?
Right, the MacBook product line, iMac product line. Too many Macs in the product, in the name.
Now, for those of our listeners who are not overly familiar,
right, that's the standard. The MacBook is the small
laptop.
Marketed to home users and average people, so it's less expensive.
Well, but the MacBook line in general is laptops. MacBook and MacBook Pro are laptops.
The iMac is the all-in-one desktop.
Right. It's just a screen and a keyboard because the computer is inside the screen.
It's built into the screen, right. Which is sort of the design of the new HP touchscreen we were talking about earlier. Yep. It's an all-in-one unit, computer monitor in one physical box.
So that will be like a laptop that would not fold.
Right.
So this will be ready, though, for the Christmas season.
Well, that's the rumors, if they're going to come out with something new in time for Christmas, or if they're going to keep the current product line. The other half of that rumor is that the new Intel chips, not Memron, whatever the next code name of Intel chip, aren't due out till early next year. So some of the thinking is they won't come out with a new model before Christmas because Macworld is in January. They might announce them then. And then there's rumors that they'll come out with new models now and new models then, which would be really
annoying.
Well,
that's what I'm wondering. Because of the Christmas season, and again, all tying this into companies trying to leak stuff out purposely, and now, oh no, I don't know where that came from. Don't know who you heard that from.
And the leaks.
It's another subdivision of the company actually getting leaks out so folks can, if they're going to spend their holiday dollars, I would think they'd want to get their hooks into, you know, at least folks are thinking that something's going to come out so that they can get those holiday dollars.
Well, if something new is coming out, people stop buying the current models. Apple has been really strong in the past about plugging leaks and stopping leaks and suing websites who leak information, because that is a big issue. If you know there's a new model coming next week or next month, you're going to stop. You won't buy the one today. So it's sort of a catch-22 between them.
Yeah, damned if they do and damned if they don't.
The current revision of the iMac has been out about 6 months, and we generally see the 8 to 10 to 12 months as being a typical refresh cycle.
How bad is that going to pork people off? If you go and buy an old model for the Christmas season, and then
Macworld, the new model, gets announced.
In January, 1 month more.
Well, that's always typical of any industry.
There's
always a new model coming, which is
annoying.
Listen
to Leo Laporte. When he buys one.
Yeah, when Leo buys one, that means a new model is coming next week. That was always the joke about, I just bought one, so of
course
the new
model's coming. Watch the Leo
report. Yeah, Leo. The Radio Leo, it's called on iTunes, right?
I think so, yeah. Twit.tv is his website, This Week in Tech.
So what new models does the Enrite Enterprise have coming out?
In the PC world, every week there's a new model.
That's basically, just all motherboards and processor chips. The big thing is, matter of fact, NVIDIA just came out with another GPU.
That's the big thing on the new MacBook line, is they're using the new NVIDIA 9400 chipset so that it's significantly faster than the old Intel video chipset. And the weird thing on the MacBook Pro is there's two video cards. It's got an integrated video that uses shared memory, the 9400M, and then it has a discrete video chip, the 9400GT. So the integrated video is less power consumption, so you get longer battery life, And then the discrete video chip is significantly faster, so you get better graphics performance. So now
I will say that on this box here, my MacBook Pro, which is a year old, I'm shocked that the graphics performance is not nowhere near as good as it is on my Linux box, which has a better...
Check to see what graphics card it has.
That's the way most...
It's the 8900M or something.
Yeah.
Thing, and that's why.
And Apple typically, since NVIDIA and ATI, now AMD, the two major video chipset companies, typically leapfrog each other year after year, better chips, better chips. You'll see that in the Apple models, is that this generation had ATI chips, the next generation has NVIDIA chips.
Now, I have to ask, because I didn't get a chance to check, but a friend of mine was telling me that the new MacBooks don't come with either the remote or the VGA connector. You have to buy those separately?
It's always been the case. You need adapters for your videos.
The MacBook has not come with the adapters. The MacBook Pro has.
And that's still true.
We don't know yet.
Okay.
Could check the specs, probably. I don't know offhand yet.
Right.
But what is different is they changed the video port again, but they changed it to a new standard. They're now using the DisplayPort technology instead of the DVI technology.
So you have to buy a connector for your monitor if you've got one already.
Right.
But even if it's a Mac monitor.
Yeah. But they released a new Mac monitor using the DisplayPort.
So if you buy the new monitor, you got to buy a connector for your old Mac.
Those connectors are like $19.
Yeah, $20.
It's not a big deal.
You're supposed to buy the new...
As long as you remember to buy them.
Yeah, you're supposed to buy the new computer and the new monitor, then you don't need any adapter.
That personal shopping assistant has to remind you to buy them.
Yeah.
That's his job. Let him earn it.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, this is the thing. You know, I mean, we're going to, over the next few weeks, folks, kind of remind you here, we will be, you know, doing these bits right on through the rest of the year other than November 16th. We're going to be recording the shows here on Soundbites and playing it during the first hour of the Buffalo Bills game. So if you've got questions, please email them to us because we will be doing questions like you heard this week. We did over 4 questions on the air, and email them to either Nick, Steve, or I, or just to the regular Soundbites website, and we'll try to get them on the air, and you can listen for the answers. We won't guarantee each week how many we can cover, but we'll try to cover as many as we can and go from there. So, you know, come to Second Life. We're there every Friday night at 9 o'clock. That's Eastern Standard Time. That's 6 o'clock.
Pacific Time.
Yeah, Pacific Standard Time. And then on Sundays, you're going to have to kind of watch the events calendar for what's going on there, because I do post each week what time we're going to be on in Sunday. It might vary maybe 5 or 10 minutes, but, you know, whether it's at 11 o'clock or 11:45 or 12:30, you check the events thing. If you're not signed up with Soundbites, sign up, because this is a way, you know, you can find out where and when we're going to be on. It's our only vehicle that we've got to do it. And again, we want to thank Wham for allowing us to have this time to be here and still get your computer questions. And with that, folks, we got to wrap up another week here at Soundbites. And, you know, hey, if you can, tune in again next week. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And this has been Soundbites.
Well done, Dave.